It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, a very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday. It's the 1st of February. What a long year January was. And you're welcome into the second month of the year. And it is, as I said, 5 minutes past nine, and it is the 9 to noon show. We're with you for the next 3 hours on this programme. Lots coming up on the show, as always. We're going to keep you across all the major topics that are making you talk at home, and I'm sure out and about, or wherever you are. Later on, too, we're going to be talking history with Dr. Joe. Looking forward to that. We're going to be speaking about the person after which McGill Summer School was named after. And talking about a little bit about that history as well. And that normally takes us down a path where we start talking about lots of people. Anyway, that and so much more besides. And we want your views and your comments and your emails. I'll tell you how you get in touch with us. Will I? It's 086 60 25,000. That's WhatsApps and texts. Just to invite you, by the way, if you want to have your say via WhatsApp voice note, feel free to send us the voice note and we can play it out for you as well if you feel that helps you get your point across. And not everyone really is as, you know, is as comfortable typing words out as other people are. So we want everyone to have their say. So if you prefer, for whatever reason, it could be that, it could be just the way you prefer to communicate, hold the wee mic down and send us a voice message if you want to have your say that way. If you want to give us a call, 07491 25,000. Caroline, as always, taking your calls, and Shannon working away on the programme as well. And you can email comments at highlandradio.com. Right, let's get through a look at some of the newspapers now. We'll start with just the second page of the Donegal News this morning. Planners at Donegal County Council have sought more information from the applicant of a proposed Islamic Cultural Centre in Letterkenny. Letterkenny Islamic Association, CLG, lodged plans in November 23 for the construction of the centre in Lisnennan. The proposed development comprises a ground and first floor, mezzanine prayer hall, areas for males and females, a coffee dock and sandwich bar area, and a library and teaching room. Proposed plans also include the construction of an access road, footpaths, car park and bicycle rack site, works, landscaping and bin enclosure, and so on and so forth. In a chief executive order issued in recent days, planners are requesting the applicant submit an archaeological assessment of the development site carried out by a suitably qualified archaeologist, which is standard practice with a lot of these planning applications. So that is, we understand the plans for the centre are progressing, and they are going to get that report and submit it to the council. The Derry News this morning, management of Derry's Northwest Regional College have been accused of bullying and harassing teaching staff in an attempt to break ongoing strike action. The claim from a lecturer who contacted Derry News followed receipt of a threatening, in inverted commas, letter signed by Principal and Chief Executive Leo Murphy. In his letter, Mr. Murphy referenced the action short of strike being undertaken by members of the university and college union in the college. On to the Farmers' Journal. And the Department of Agriculture has moved to allow more cows and calves to meet the terms of the Suckler Carbon Efficiency Programme following farmer outrage over changes to the Irish Cattle Breeding Federation indexes. Heifers out of geotyped cows in SCEP herds that are not eligible for SCEP on their own genomic evaluations may now become eligible if their size and dam meet a minimum requirement on the September 23 ICBF re-evaluation. Now, evaluation, I beg your pardon. So it just points to the complexity of farming when you would even struggle to read it, let alone understand it. I know lots of people out in the farming community do, but there you go. That's the hoops that the farmers have to jump through. On to the Irish Times this morning, and the British measures which secured the Democratic Unionist Party's return to power sharing are expected to become law today, paving the way for the imminent restoration of the North Ireland's political institutions. MPs will vote on two pieces of legislation following a debate in the House of Commons, but this is a formality as it has the support of both the British government and the main opposition party. the outgoing Speaker of the North's Assembly, Alex Maskey, wrote to MLAs yesterday to inform them preparations were being made to enable a sitting to take place at short notice in January 2020. The Assembly was summoned within 24 hours and a similar time frame may be necessary on this occasion, he wrote. Saturday is believed to be the most likely day for an Assembly recall when the first order of business will be to nominate a Speaker and fill the First and Deputy First Minister's roles. So it seems like it is going to happen. And look, every society, for all their wrongs and rights, of course, every society functions better, it would seem, with a elected government in place. And that's the way it's going to be in the North in the coming days. A warning for those over 55. Older people and pensioners have been warned to stay vigilant after new figures showed a huge jump in fraud scams in the first half of last year. The industry group that represents banks found there had been a 26% rise in attempted scams compared with the same period a year earlier, with victims conned out of a total of €8.6 million. It said the over 55s were particularly vulnerable to financial scams, with large numbers getting hit for upwards of 5,000. And they come in all different shapes and sizes, and we cover them extensively on this program. And I've always done so in the hope that we help through the people that we work with avoid people listening to this program getting done by scams. But it happens all the time. We have to be extra, extra careful. I would love to see the phone companies, the phone networks, the handset developers, the banks, the lending institutions all do a little bit more or find a way whereby we can validate the messages that we receive. There has to be a way. I would love to see them do that, because the scammers can throw out such a wide net. They only need one or two of us to fall foul and their money is made. More woes at RTE. The Irish Daily Mail reports, along with most other papers, a 400,000 golden handshake for RTE's former chief financial officer was signed off by the current head of HR under instructions from former Director General Dee Forbes. RTE Human Resources Director Eimear Cusack issued an approval letter for Breda O'Keefe's exit package, falsely stating it was signed off by the executive board, of which Ms. Cusack was a member. So this is like €400,000 of taxpayers' money. Now, you could say, well, maybe it's half taxpayers' money, half ad money. I don't know. But anyway, whichever way, this is our money that people are obliged to pay. €400,000 of that was given to someone, was given to and signed off by Dee Forbes, €400,000. Miss Cusack initially asked Miss Forbes if it was a good idea for the CFO to avail of the scheme, questioning how it would deliver cost savings. But proceedings to write the letter that made this agreement between Miss Forbes and Miss O'Keefe are legally binding, so there's no out. RTE's Director General Kevin Backhurst said yesterday he was shocked at the revelation. Now, 3,500 regular people out there today are facing court for the non-payment of €160 licence fee. 3,500 people. Now, you can imagine the stress. You get a summons through the post, or you may have to go to court, or you feel you're obliged to do so, and you face the rigours of the law. Dee Forbes, at the moment, is can't answer questions. She's not well enough to answer questions. Many of the board are still in place in RTE. Breda O'Keefe okayed this exit package with Dee Forbes. It's legally binding. It's locked in. It can't be changed. And that's it. And what everyone's disgusted, oh, this is terrible, you know, but no consequences. And yet 3,500 people across this country are worried that they may have to go to court because they either choose not to or can't afford to pay their TV licence. It's there's a serious difference between the laws, it seems, and how it applies to you. Particularly, it seems, the more money you have. I don't know if you have any views on that. 086 60 25,000. Also widely reported, and I'll take it from the Irish Daily Star, members of the Defence Forces will be able to wear fake tan, woohoo, nail polish, polish, and grow beards under new regulations kicking in from today. And that's just the fellas. However, those wishing to grow facial hair have been warned its length will be monitored, while females must wear their locks in one of six different approved styles. Now, that might sound generous, but in North Korea, There's 14 styles of hair that women can choose from. In the army, it's only going to be 6. It also comes after the Commission on the Defence Force recommended outdated bans should be abolished 2 years ago. But army chiefs have warned the appearance will still be subject to close supervision to ensure that nothing should detract from the uniform. Permission to grow a beard must first be obtained from a commander officer or a medical officer if the member is excused shaving due to a skin condition. The hair can be no more than 13 millimetres long and must start 1 inch above the Adam's apple and form a straight line below the cheekbone. Personnel still in training must stay clean shaven. Women, they can use nail varnish, but must use a range running from nude to baby pink. Sergeant Major Keith Caffrey, who's in charge of reviewing grooming standards, said they will apply to their unit commander and there are specific reasons to not approve it, particularly in the operational environment. So nail polish, fake tan and beards, all okay for the army. As I say, it's widely reported. I'm not sure it's going to vex people out there one way or other. Is it? Maybe it is. Let us have your views. 086 60 25,000. Maybe there's someone feels very passionately that that should not be the case. The Irish Sun today, the GEA is terrified by the scale of cocaine use among players, it's claimed, with one big-name county star seeking professional help for their drug addiction. Experts say the use of cocaine has gone through the roof at club level, while dozens of inter-county players are being treated for drugs, alcohol and gambling issues. Limerick hurling legend Kieran Carey, a psychotherapist who specialises in addiction through his company, My Move Counselling, yesterday said the cocaine issue has gone through the roof at club level. And I suppose, you know, the GEA is a community organisation. And I imagine what happens within sort of the GEA and those involved in playing the game is going to be reflective of what's happening in society, because they are just regular people doing regular things that we are. And I'm about not drug taking, I'm about, you know, working and all the other stuff, studying and what have you. And if there's a lot of cocaine being used across society, which there clearly is, it's going to be reflected amongst the playing membership of the GEA. But the organisation, the association, concerned about that. Do you share those concerns? 086 60 25,000. This is a bizarre story. It was in the Irish Daily Mirror. Mary Lou McDonald was accused of being disrespectful in the Dáil for wearing a mesh top in a bizarre dressing down sent to the camcorder. The Sinn Féin leader wore the floral print net garment with a white t-shirt underneath and paired it with a black blazer on October 11th last year. And it's very incredibly modest. For those of you watching, I'll just show you the picture of it. I mean, it is incredibly modest there. I don't see how anyone could complain about that, but someone did. She also sported a pair of red framed glasses with pendant earrings while blasting the government about the budget they announced the day beforehand. Now, I'm sure I will never sit here and read such a detailed description of what a man has worn in the Dáil, but that is the world we still live in. The deputy's ensemble seemed to be too much for one furious person who decided to write a complaint email to camcorder Sean O'Farrell, demanding that a dress code be introduced. The email was not sent by a fellow Tidy, and had to be from a member of the public. The person declared they did not want to see Ms. McDonald carrying on like that and be allowed to get away with it. The letter, which was obtained by the Irish Mirror through a Freedom of Information request, said, "I think Mary Lou McDonald's top is a disgrace." All right, okay. Well, someone clearly, with little time on their hands, I would say. The Tyrconnell Tribune, a complaint about a controversial T.G. Cahir documentary on the explosion in Chrysler on October 2022 has been partially upheld by the National Media Watchdog. Commissioner Mann said the documentary, which was broadcast on February 8th, 2023, 4 months after the incident in which 10 people died, had breached the Broadcasting Act 2009 by causing harm offence. The National Media Regulator said T.G. Cahir had not sufficiently demonstrated that it took due care in broadcasting material which could cause distress, particularly given it was shown just 4 months after the tragedy and before a Garda investigation into the explosion was completed. It also ruled T.G. Cahir could have avoided causing distress to bereaved families by consulting them in advance of its transmission. Now, the thing about it is as well, and this is so raw and so current, even the Commissioner Mann response to the programme you could argue, lacks sensitivity in that it details in its response what was wrong with the documentary, and it outlines. And I found it actually, I did watch the documentary because I thought I had to if we were going to talk about it. I was opposed to it being broadcast in the first instance, but TG Kahar were clear that they thought it was the right thing to do. But even the response from Commissioner Mann, it's almost even, I would imagine, more difficult reading because it writes down in words what was wrong with the documentary. And some time has passed, but that still is very difficult, and people reading that and even reading the Commissioner Mann findings might not be clear who the individuals that they're talking about are, right? I don't want to read it because that in a way would add to that distress, but that's how sensitive this matter is. So even the Commissioner Mann, arguably, I think, could have been a little bit more sensitive in their language in describing what was wrong with the TG Kahar programme. But anyway, as I say, they were told in advance that it was just not wise. They went ahead with it and were quite determined to go ahead with it. But anyway, okay, that's the Tyrconnell Tribune front page there. All right, all those papers available for you today. Now, just a reminder for you that you can watch this program every day if that suits you in your life, if you're at home or what have you. We're available on your smart TV and your Fire Stick or Google TV through the YouTube app. You type in Highland Radio Ireland and we're streaming live. So you can watch us on your big screen TV. Many of you do, which is great if it suits you and your lifestyle. And also we're on YouTube and Facebook across your mobile devices. On Facebook, it's Highland Hub or Highland Radio News and Sport. We are joined on the programme now by Councillor Michael McClafferty, who is the Kirloch of Glenties Municipal District. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us. Hello, Michael. No, we don't have Michael there. Michael McClafferty is going to be joining us shortly. He says it's time there were laws for pedestrians to be mandated to wear high visibility vests. We're also joined on the programme by Ronan Gallagher, who is co-founder of the We Greenway Initiative. Hopefully you're there, Ronan. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks for joining us. Okay. What is your view on the proposals, which we'll hear from the councillor in a moment, that high-vis should be made mandatory?
Well, it's an emotive issue for many people, for pedestrians, cyclists, and obviously for elected members around the country who believe that, 2023 was a very bad year for road fatalities. We had 184 people killed, and that was a 19% increase on the previous year, and that was the highest total since 2014. So I understand when members look at ways of trying to make people safer on our roads, but trying to enforce or trying to make it mandatory for pedestrians and cyclists to wear high-vis is not the solution, and there's no evidence internationally to show that that would be the case.
Is it part of the solution, though, Ronan? Would you concede that?
Oh, that's a very good point. I don't wear high-vis myself on roads, whether I'm walking or whether I'm cycling. If someone wants to wear high-vis, that is a personal choice. But international, the University of Bologna in Italy did a study over a period of 15 years where they analysed road collisions involving cyclists. And bang in the middle of the study in 2010, the Italian authorities mandated for high-vis. But the study showed that there was no conclusive evidence to indicate that wearing high-vis vests for cycling in this instance reduced road fatalities or road injuries.
Yeah, but...
And in some instances, it actually increased.
But that's a study, okay. But as a driver, if I'm driving along the road, I see people wearing high vis and I know they're there. And then at other times, unfortunately, and most drivers will have had to have done this at some point, you come on someone walking in the wrong direction or whatever, in black clothing, and it's only for the grace of God sometimes you feel that you didn't mow them down. So surely, I'm not disputing the study because, I don't have the qualifications to do so, but surely you're less likely to hit someone you can see than someone you can't.
Well, you're less likely to hit someone if you're not going fast. So traffic law is uncompromising about the duties of a driver. Mm-hmm. So a person shall not drive a vehicle in a public place without due care and attention, and without and on top of that, without reasonable consideration for other persons mm-hmm. using the place. That is the Road Traffic Act.
But Ronan, just so in relation to that study, like that study that you quoted, can you say for certainty was it on rural and national roads? Was it rural driving, city driving? You know, was it areas with cycle lanes, without cycle lanes? You know, because I want to make sure that we're comparing like with like here, because my experience is driving on tiny, narrow roads.
I accept that. So the study, from what I understand, looked at, and this was in Italy, and it looked at all incidents involving cyclists and other road users in that period, and it didn't discriminate against what type of road that it was on. But mm-hmm. but that's, you know, no study is without criticism. That's the first thing to say. But just going back to traffic law, to the Roads Act, I mean, it is very, very clear about, you know, the duty of a driver. So I drive on rural and urban roads, I cycle and I walk on rural and urban roads. And my experience is as valid as your experience 100%. Or as the member's experience who's called for high-vis to be mandatory. My experience is speed is the problem. Mm-hmm. That is the key aspect that we're discussing here. So people talking about high-vis from a cycling and pedestrian's point of view, or from, you know, the Wee Greenway's point of view, that we would see that as a distraction from the need to stop distracted and inattentive driving. But that's where the major issue.
Yeah, but if a lorry or a tractor is on the roads I would drive on, which generally don't have hard shoulders, they're really quite narrow. If a car, a tractor, or a motorbike is driving on that road with no lights on, okay, you can't expect me to assume responsibility for their poor driving. You know, you can't say, well, I must have done something wrong because I didn't see them and I smashed into them. It's generally accepted that they must have front-facing light, rear-facing lights. And I would apply that in this situation, because we're talking life and death, to pedestrians and cyclists as well, to give everyone a fair shout. I'm not a very fast driver, but sometimes it's really, really wet. Sometimes I'm being blinded by LED lights, and you could say, well, they shouldn't be legal either. But at the end of the day, surely it's better if I have a better chance of seeing someone sharing this space with me than not.
Yeah, and I won't dispute that. But just with regard to being able to see a cyclist, particularly at night, it is the law for a cyclist to have lights at light up, you know, at lighting time. So I would never cycle in the dark without lights front and back. Apart from it not being safe to do that, I'm legally obliged to do that, and I would encourage people to do that. But really, I do feel, you know, and if we look at the statistics for last year, and if we even look at, you talk about rural roads, so if you take Donegal in this context, there is over 6,270 kilometres of road in Donegal, and all but 1,200 kilometres are classified as local roads. So there is a lot of factors at play here. So there is the road network, it's the size of vehicles, it's how powerful vehicles are. Mm. I mean, the size of SUVs are probably too big for local roads in rural Ireland. Mm-hmm. Yet everyone wants to drive them now.
So, like,
so the size of these vehicles
I'm
alone.
I'm not being emotive, Ronan, and I don't know what your family makeup is or anything, okay? But if you had, say, you know, two teenagers that were walking to a friend's house from your house to another house at night time, would you not prefer that they were wearing high vis than not?
I probably wouldn't. I don't. Well, I don't have teenage children.
Well, that's
children,
actually
so
good, because to be honest with you, I'd prefer
one
that you,
aspect, you
I'd
know,
prefer it, you don't, if you know what I mean, because I don't want it to sound like I'm trying to. I'm just curious. If you did, which makes it easy for me to ask the question then, if you did have two teenage children, you're living on one of these roads with no hard shoulders, and they wanted to walk half a kilometre up to a friend's house in winter and it was dark, you wouldn't say to them, listen, stick on your high-vis?
No, but I wouldn't say to them, don't put on high-vis. it would be a personal choice.
Okay.
But what I would like to, it's a very good question, and it's a very good situation to think about. I would like to think that the people who are using that road that my teenage children are going to walk on, I would like to believe that the drivers,
humanity,
the humans behind the wheel of a car, will drive properly on that road, and will drive thinking we might encounter pedestrians.
I would not put my children's lives in their hands. I really, really wouldn't. But I'm not judging you. And as I say, I'm glad you don't have it, because it might sound like I'm trying to emotionally blackmail you, which I'm not. And I think you know that, Ronan. Stay with me, Ronan.
I accept it.
Okay, yeah, good. Ronan, stay there, because Councillor Michael McClafferty is with us now. I suppose, just listening to Ronan there, Michael, and I suppose in the context of your calls, what have you got to say?
Well, Greg, to be quite honest with you about it, is Ronan's entitled to his opinion, how he sees life going forward. But I see life going forward at the minute in the utmost manner of safety for first of all, for school children going to school, adults, teenagers alike, whether they're walking from house to house or they're walking a narrow side road or whatever, or back roads around where I live myself, something same as yourself, Greg. I don't think it's unreasonable to ask people to wear a high-vis vest.
Well, you're not asking them, Michael. You're looking for it to be a criminal offence not to wear a high vest, which is a bit of a jump from asking.
Well, we're looking for it to go mandatory, Greg, as such, yes. No, maybe the criminal's asking a bit out of context, but anyway, we're looking for it to be enforced as such. That's what I'm looking for, Greg. That was the point behind my motion, as such, to be fair for the public out there. But as I say, in the interest of safety, like, for example, 2023, 44 pedestrians killed, the year before that, 22, 43 killed. Like, now, whatever the reasons were behind it, we're not going to get, I don't know exactly, we're not going to get into that. But the point is, there were pedestrians out walking, so on, etc. There were a number of cyclists well in through them. There's been three e-scooter deaths, I believe, as well in 23. The e-scooter was actually adopted onto this the last year as well, as you're aware, for people wearing using e-scooters to put on high-vis as well.
But the point, so I think here, Michael, and really want to be sensitive to anyone who's lost someone on the roads, but we have to have these conversations too. I think Roland's point, and he's well capable to make it himself, and he can come back in whenever he likes, is, you know, the motion, you could argue, presumes that it is the fault of the pedestrian. We don't know if all of the people were wearing high vis or not, and it sort of doesn't talk to the blame maybe that the driver has to take.
Well, I did say, Greg, and I did say in the chamber that the driver, obviously, if somebody gets knocked down, somebody seriously injured or worse, and then it's alongside that, then the driver still have waited for the rest of their life. Like, it's not pointing the blame either way as such, Greg. That's not the intention of the motion. And if people are taking it that way, I apologise for that. But that is not the intention of the motion. The intention of the motion going forward is, when we see how this all pans out, is to just to be for people to be safe on the road. That's what we're looking for. Because as you said yourself there, you're going down a road wherever, a dark road, unlit road, no footpath in the road, which many people in Donegal walk on through no fault of their own, but they've no choice to get from A to B. You're driving along in your car. If somebody's dressed in dark clothes, you do not have a possible hope of seeing them, depending on the condition of the night. And it may be through no fault of your own either. You're driving down a road, there's a car coming facing you, the opposite direction, close by, with maybe bright lights on, LED lights, whatever. It's distracting. You know, you're focused on that. You may not necessarily see the person immediately alongside you.
Ronan, like, I find myself as well, do you know, that you know, driving is not perfect, and you're a driver yourself, Ronan, as well, of course, as you've mentioned, but driving's not perfect. So I've found myself driving perfectly safe, or how I deem myself, or you know, and having to take, maybe there could be an animal or something like that there, having to take some evasive manoeuvre or whatever, maybe encroach a little bit over the white lines into the left. Again, in that scenario, I'm doing everything I should be doing, but I'd be able to make a more informed choice about my reaction to such an incident if I could see the pedestrian. And I think cyclists generally do have lights, but so maybe focus a little bit on pedestrians. If I could have the best chance of seeing that pedestrian, because your argument, Ronan, which I respect, and that's why we invited you on. Your argument really is it's almost as if everything else is perfect and it's just a pedestrian or a cyclist and it's just cars on the road. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and I mean, I'm sympathetic, you know, to individuals. I mean, I've spoken to people who have had close misses when they've been driving. You know, maybe they've come around a bend and a pedestrian is there, high hedge, bends, you know, dark, and maybe they weren't wearing, you know, bright clothing. And it's, you know, this person has said, you know, my God, I mean, I nearly hit that person. But one of the things which you never hear members discussing, and although the member here has just alluded to it slightly, is driver behaviour. Mm. And again, I go back to this traffic law. It's uncompromising about the duties of a driver.
But in fairness, Rowan, and like
driving a vehicle in a public place without due care and attention, that is against the law.
Yeah, we talk constantly, in fairness, Ronan, we do talk constantly about speed, seatbelt wearing, cars being safe to drive. We were the first county in Ireland, or the second county in Ireland, to host road safety road shows, which demonstrated to younger people the dangers of driving and the importance of safety. So I don't know what it's like in other counties, but I do think 90% of the message coming out of Donegal is towards drivers, and now we're focusing a little bit on pedestrians. And just let me ask you, Ronan, have you not found yourself coming around a corner and there's someone in dark clothing and you've gone WTF?
I've found myself in that situation when I've been driving in daytime and in the evening, but I've been driving with reasonable care, so I'm not coming around the corner at 60, 70 kilometres an hour when I have no chance to react.
Okay.
And I've been able to pass,
now,
and I've been able to brake safely.
Yeah, one other thing you said, Ronan, is that you choose not to wear high-vis. So is it fashion? Is it comfort? Like, why do you choose not to wear high-vis? Because it's a conscious choice you make.
It's a conscious choice, and it's not a it's not a choice of fashion. It's just a choice that I don't feel that I shouldn't be in a situation that I need to swaddle myself in body armor or high-vis to make that short journey on a road because somebody else out there may take my life. And the big issue here. And I mean, I've cycled, I've walked, I don't live in Donegal anymore. I lived in Donegal for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
I now live in another county, another rural county with the same type of problems with, you know, with people with no footpaths on rural roads. So this is not a problem that is just for Donegal. This is a nationwide issue. And what we have here is we have non-enforcement of the existing Roads Act, mm-hmm. because there are not enough Gardaí. That is the bottom line.
But you
line.
Would know from your and time, people, Ronan, you would know from your time in living in Donegal and travelling around Donegal, and it's not exclusive to Donegal, there will never be a time, and it is completely impossible for Gardaí to police the roads to eliminate speeding. So there has to be responsibility here. Stay where you are, and I'm going to come back to you, Michael, as well, because you triggered this most recent debate on this. But I want to introduce David too, who's a driving instructor. David, and you've heard both sides of it there from your perspective. You play a really vital role, actually, really in sort of educating people. What's your view?
Yeah, well, I didn't catch it all, Greg, but I caught quite a bit of what your contributor Ronan said there, and I caught some of what the councillor said as well. Now, you know, the first thing I would say I was when I was talking to your producer there, and I have been a driving instructor for 12 years. Every single day that I go out with my pupils, I am doing my best to instill road safety in them. I talk to them about road safety constantly. I mention the terrible figures that we have seen last year, which was horrendous. The start of this year was just off the scale, as we all know. The one thing that I would like to, you know, your contributor Ronan there, when he came on at the very start, he said, this is a very emotive issue. What is emotive about asking or advising someone to wear a yellow vest that might save their life? Mm-hmm. What is emotive about that? The only time that it's emotive, Greg, is when a pedestrian or a cyclist is knocked down on the road mm-hmm. and they're killed.
But David, for this, for the purpose of this conversation, if for the purpose of this conversation, though, and to be fair to Ronan and Michael, you're going to have to frame your opinion in the proposal that it would be legal, it would be mandatory to wear it. You know, I mean, listen, there's lots of things. You people say don't smoke, but you're allowed to smoke. What this is saying, what the proposal would be here, is that you would be obliged to. In other words, you'd be potentially liable under the Road Traffic Act or some act or other if you weren't wearing high-vis. Well, would you agree with that? Because that's the crux of what triggered Ronan to ring out. Advice is out there. Well, not doesn't care, but this is about making it compulsory.
Fair enough. Like, I mean, the compulsory thing is, you know, well, okay, I mean, if that's the only way I contribute to it, but I mean, I would like to contribute to the conversation in a broader way instructor point of view. I mean, to make something and to say to everyone, okay, you must do that. Okay, maybe that, I don't know if it's a step too far, but, you know, that's maybe something that's very difficult to police and to enforce. But I mean, from an instructor point of view, I would just like to go back to some of the things that Ronan said. And you asked him the question, you know, if he had two young people that were members of his family and they were going to walk along a dark road at night, would he advise them to put on a high-vis vest or to put something on that's visible to other drivers? And I mean, I find that kind of, you know, I have two daughters. I have a granddaughter. I mean, I can't kind of take that on board there, that somebody wouldn't say, well, you know, I think it would be advisable. You're going out on a dark road. Maybe it's wet. As you said earlier, there's no hard shoulder on the road. Can I listen, Greg, you drive, probably all of us that are contributing to this drive. After dark, again, it seems to be a little bit weighed heavily against the motorist here. But, you know, and we know that speed is a serious issue in this country. No one needs to tell us that. The majority of people in this country are driving too fast, especially in urban areas. And I would be the first to agree with that. But there's such a thing as a personal responsibility as well for a cyclist, for a runner, for a walker, for a jogger, whatever the case may be. There's such a thing as personal responsibility. That people must take personal responsibility. They can't assume, they have to look at it the other way around. They can't assume, okay, I'm going to maybe feed into what Ronan's saying now. They can't assume that everybody's coming around that bend at 30 kilometres per hour. They can't assume that, a motorist can't assume that every cyclist is going to have a rear light on if they decide not to wear a high-vis vest. You know, it's personal responsibility as well. Mm.
Okay. You understand, Ronan, what I'm saying? Just come back into this, Greg. Of course, Ronan. That's what we invited you on.
I mean, I'm not disputing that if someone wears bright clothing or high vis, that it may help a driver to see them better in daytime or in
not
the evening.
Not a case of may, Ronan. Well,
what I'm disputing, but look, just let me finish, please. But spotting is one thing. But driving safely around that person is another thing. And that is where I go back to traffic law. And this is where the instructor should know this. The traffic law is very clear about the duties of the driver. The person shall not drive a vehicle in a public place without due care and attention or without reasonable consideration for other persons using that place. That is very clear. The issue, and you alluded to it earlier, about speed. Speed and driving under the influence of drugs, whether it be cocaine or alcohol, they are the elephants in the room here.
Okay,
our vehicles are too big, our roads are too narrow, and people drive too fast to react to other road users who should be out there.
In relation to the roads that you drove on up here, no hard shoulder, you know yourself, white line up the middle, but between two towns. we've talked an awful lot about, you've talked an awful lot about the responsibility of the driver, and that's grand. What is, in your mind, the responsibility of the pedestrian? In at night, on these roads, it's very clear what you think the driver should be doing and the rules they should be following. I'm just asking you, what responsibility do you believe the pedestrian has?
Well, a pedestrian should walk with due care for all the road users. I don't deny that. I mean, if someone wants to walk down the middle of the road at night time, they're liable to meet a vehicle head on, and that's not a situation that I would like to see. But I'm not trying to duck the question. I'm just telling you that the law is clear. The responsibility is on the driver.
But what responsibility, not through the law, but what responsibility as a member of society does that pedestrian have, do you think, to contribute to road safety?
That person should think about what they're going to do. If they feel it will make them safer wearing high vis or wearing bright clothes or walking with a light at night time, then that person should
do
that. But I can tell you now, my experience is that that's not the case.
Okay, Ronan, listen.
That's not the case.
Thank you very much for your time. Ronan Gallagher, who is co-founder of the We Greenway Initiative, also David, a driving instructor. And just to finish with you, Councillor Michael McLafferty, I mean, you proposed the motion. I presume it was passed. What would you like to see now, just in a moment or two, if that's okay?
I would like to see going forward, Greg, as the motion is put forward, for people to become mandatory if they're out along the road wearing high vis vest / armband, as it was touched on as well, or a good quality flash lamp, so that the motorist of the day can see them walking. There's no issue with seeing them, and hopefully it will leave things safer.
But do you believe it should be the law? Do you believe they should be obliged? They should be mandated. So if they don't, they can be stopped by the Gardaí, given a warning, potentially fined, because my understanding, if I'm reading your motion correctly, is you want it to be mandatory for people on the roads, cyclists, pedestrians, to wear high visibility vests. Do you still stand by that?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, good stuff. All right, that's fine.
I do believe that.
Most people agree with you, so I'm not attacking you. Most people agree with you.
But Greg, no, that's fair enough, Greg, and I understand that you've your job to do as well, same as I have mine to do, and the two gentlemen there as well from their respective points. But one thing I will say as well, you mentioned the Gardaí there. I've known myself in the last couple of years where Gardaí have stopped along the road, handed out an armband, handed out a high vis or whatever.
Yep.
Obviously, I would imagine had a quick 2-minute conversation with a person of the moment or the night, sorry, and carried on again. I know that for a fact that has happened. And I praise the Gardaí for doing that. But the whole thing going forward here, this is not about attacking anybody. This is about road safety. Road safety going forward. That's all I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no different to I'm not a parent myself, but there's no different to parents out there. Your parents yourself, Greg. Parents teaching the children going up the ways of life, manners, good manners, mm-hmm. everything else. Rules of the road, it's the same thing.
Okay.
You wouldn't want your small child going up, running out onto a road. Mm. So
no,
I don't see why they would expect
them. By the way, if you're rushing to the Road Safety Authority website to order high visibility vests, it was pointed out by a Kerry councillor that they're through their RSA website, they're currently out of stock of all high vis items, which is really quite bizarre. Okay, councillor, thank you very much for your time. We might come back to this. Lots of people calling in, lots of you texting in, but we do have a break to take. Stay right where you are. I cannot believe that Ronan does not agree with you, Greg. Surely high-vis vests help. It's a no-brainer, says Kevin in our draw. Those that are driving on the road need to take care, and walkers need to take care too. I'm a careful driver and I've never had an accident yet. I've been close a few times with walkers in dark clothing. Not all drivers are good. Pedestrians need to be aware too of what they're doing to be safe on the roads. Another, I would agree with Councillor McLafferty 100%. The road at Derrybeg, the cars fly on it. People wear dark clothing and your life is ruined if you knock someone down. And I think really what Ronan is saying as well, and it's picked up here in this text, is that cars are flying on it, and that, we need to put more emphasis or further emphasis on drivers and their role in all of this. That's, I think, to paraphrase somewhat what he's saying there. You would need a third lane for pedestrians on the road. If a car is reversing, pedestrians should stand back and not be another obstruction. Pedestrians should walk on footpaths. There needs to be rules for pedestrians. Pedestrians, says this listener, think they rule the road. Caller says that the argument of speed is skewed in that they are making cars that can do high speeds when the high speed limit in Ireland is 120 kilometres per hour. And that's often been the case, hasn't it? Couldn't agree more with Michael. Good to see someone with a bit of sense. They should get a good fine if they don't have high-vis jackets on. Ronan is making no sense, according to this listener. With all due respect to both the walker and the driver, I feel it is irresponsible of walkers to walk on the main road between Glenties and Ardra in the dark. Even wearing the high-vis vest, it is difficult to see the walker on a wet night. Almost impossible. There is a track in Glenties and lots of walk areas within the town boundary that include footpaths. Another, Greg, ask him if you hit a pedestrian cyclist at 30 kilometres per hour, which isn't speeding. Is he trying to say that speed to hit someone is okay? Tell him to cop on. And typical cyclists think they own the road. But that being said, we appreciate Ronan coming on and expressing his views. Many people might share them, you see, but because it might be seen as a controversial view, not everyone will express it. It would be interesting to know how many pedestrians involved in collisions were not wearing high-vis clothing, especially at dusk or when it's dark. And it's information we can try and get together. What planet is Ronan on? Saying he doesn't wear high-vis. How irresponsible. We see every evening people walking in dark clothes. It's so dangerous. And last one before we take a break for the news. Everyone should be wearing high-vis vests when out walking, etc. And should be fined if they aren't. The majority would seem to be of that view. Keep your calls and comments coming in on that. After 10 o'clock, we're going to be talking about the new deposit return scheme, which is live and active now. Is this something that you are happy with or unhappy with? You know, maybe you are a very thorough recycler and you think this is a bit of an insult that now you have to pile your plastic into a car and drive to a shop. Maybe you think it's the best thing since they started slicing bread. Really interested to listen to people in the business industry. Have you a view on it? Does this add to your business? Does it distract from it? Let us know. Views on all of those issues on 086 60 25,000.